Hello, and welcome to the Monthly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting some of the comics we got this month, a few from DC, a few from Marvel, and a few from some of the other publishers. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. In this monthly comic spotlight, I am joined by James, and we're going to be talking about some of the comics we read in May 2026. And yes, we're a little late getting to this, but stuff's been going on. How are you doing tonight, James?
I am doing well, all things considered.
All things considered. That's a very good phrase. Yeah.
Yeah, we've had a lot going on, the two of us.
It has been crazy. It has been insane. I'll be honest, I did not read as much this time as I would have liked to have, because events kind of conspired against me, but I've got four topics.
All right, and I have four comics I read, so...
Oh, even better.
And I may have a topic as well. We'll see. We'll see.
What's your first thing?
My first thing, spoiler alert, I kind of review this every month, I think, but I'm going to talk about Conan the Barbarian number 30, which I did read, and I will say it's another fantastic issue in the series. I feel like I truly have loved every issue that's come out in this run, and it's just really been working for me. And 30 issues, that's tough to do, to keep you a reader engaged, especially in modern times. So these are new stories. Typically, you get retellings of old tales that have been written from the Conan novels and stuff. But this is new material, which I really like it when we get new material. We don't get the adaptation of whatever came before, because those adaptations were done at Marvel and have been done at Dark Horse and ad nauseum. And I'm not saying they're bad. It's just, it's nice to get something fresh. Mm-hmm. And we have a character introduced that was in the last issue that I had talked about, issue 29. His name is Son of the Tooth. He's tracking Conan, literally like an assassin, tracking his every movement. And the reason why he's after Conan is Conan had killed Thothamon, which was, I think it was Thulsa Doom or Thothamon. I can't remember. One of the ones that Son of the Tooth was after. And so he wants to kill Conan. And we get two perspectives in the story. And I'll just kind of leave it at that. You can imagine their perspectives. Is Conan brash and uncaring is one thought when you're looking at things, or is Conan cunning when you're seeing it from the other perspective? And I thought that was very clever, because when the hunted becomes the prey or is being set up, and seeing it from both viewpoints, it was really kind of cool. And it leads us to a third part of this story that I'm really excited for, because this is completely new character, someone we've never seen, and it's coming to a head, and now we're going to see how it plays out.
Cool.
Yeah, so fun stuff.
Good deal. Yeah, it does seem like the Conan stuff's just been firing on all cylinders with this run.
It really has, and I've been really happy with it. Like I said, they gave him 50 issues when he was stepping into it to basically give him breadth and time to tell tales and new things. And so it's really nice, because you typically don't see that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes me really happy that a writer is given enough time, and especially at a publisher like Titan, you don't see 50 issue runs coming out of. And we're up to issue 30.
Even at Marvel and DC, you don't see 50 issue runs.
Exactly. And spoiler alert, I know 31 and 32 are out, because this is May stuff I'm talking about. In July, I'm sure they have an issue.
Mm-hmm. It's good, though, that he didn't take the 50-issue runway and, I don't say squander it, but abuse it with a slow burn or something like that that could have killed the series in its infancy.
Yeah, I agree. And I like that he's doing a little bit of adaptations of earlier material, and then he's also giving us new characters and new stuff that we've never seen. So you're not getting bored. You're kind of happy when you see an old story. Oh, yeah, I remember this one. And you get excited for it. And then, oh, this is completely new. I really like this character. This is really fun, something fresh. So a little bit of both.
Cool.
Yeah, so what's your first topic?
I am going to go with the Marvel DC Spider-Man Superman number one.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, yeah.
Now, they'd already done the Superman Spider-Man number one over at DC / Marvel versus Marvel / DC. I really find the way they're naming these a little confusing and almost silly. This had a lead story, a bunch of other stuff. The lead story with Lex Luthor and Green Goblin teaming up was actually a really good pairing that I wouldn't have expected. It worked visually with the green and the purple, scientifically.
overall, it was a good story. It had a little bit with the Kents meeting Aunt May. That was kind of fun. The next story in there, the Metropolis Marvels, had Spider-Noir versus Lex Luthor, the kingpin of crime.
Ah.
And it had the 1938 version of Superman.
Okay.
Who's got to go clear J. Jonah Jameson from being the big man. It was okay. It didn't work great for me. Yeah.
Not great.
We had then Sweethearts, which had Gwen Stacy and Lana Lang. And in the background, a splash, Superman versus Sandman, Spider-Man versus Metallo, all that kind of stuff. Most of it was Gwen and Lana comparing Peter and Clark. And really, Peter and Clark made a cameo in the final two pages. And it's like, it felt like it was an essay comparing and contrasting disguised as a story.
Okay.
So it was okay, but not a get the issue for this kind of deal.
All right. Makes sense.
We then had Identity War, where we see things like The Thing versus the Legion of Subs, the Legion versus Spider-Man, we get Cloak and Dagger, lots of continuity Easter eggs and such, you know, Red Lanterns, all sorts of stuff like that. Saturn Woman of the Legion of Supervillains and Mysterio were the main bad guys. We see Superman with the Hulk and a few things like that. There was a nice scene there at the end. It was a good story for Ben Grimm, but it felt like it was, let's toss Easter eggs in, and this in and of itself could have been a full issue, I think, and might have been better off for it. The next one, Ghosting, had Steel versus Hobgoblin with a Thor cameo.
Okay.
It was good, but it was like five pages, and it's like, there's not a whole lot you can do there, and it's like, hey, Steel has a hammer, Thor has a hammer, let's put them together. Wow, genius.
That's not good.
Yeah. We then had the story called Remarkable, where Ghost Spider is trying to get Superman's autograph, but meets Supergirl instead. They don't click, they butt heads, Livewire's the threat there. And it's light reading, it's not bad, but it is so far from essential reading, even for the four pages it was. It's like, really? We then had a Miles Morales Superman versus Dormammu Brainiac, and it was actually a nice thing with Miles asking Superman for heroing advice. And the answer, I thought, was not something I've seen out of Superman, but is almost iconic Superman of just show up and try to make things better.
Yeah.
Really simple and to the point.
Okay.
The next backup was The Wondrous and the Worthy, which had the Jane Foster Thor and Wonder Woman versus some parademons with Venom symbiotes. It really felt like it was the prologue to an event-level story against Darkseid, but it wasn't. It was just a standalone kind of a deal.
All right.
We then had One of Those Days with Spider-Man and Superman, where Peter is just down about Gwen's death, and Superman gives him a much-needed pep talk. That's two pages. It felt like that should have been inside of a story, not a story in and of itself.
So not really great.
Not horrible, but you know how like when you go to the grocery store and they've got the little taste test you can do of something and stuff?
Yeah.
If you like it, it's certainly not a full meal.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
It was a decent issue. I think it had better backup stories than the Superman Spider-Man issue. But the more I thought about it afterwards, I would have taken this and the Deadpool Batman. I'd have switched things up.
Okay.
I think they'd have been better off teaming up Spider-Man and Batman.
Yeah.
Because both of their origins are how they responded to death of loved ones.
Oh, that's true. Great contrast.
Both of them dealing with guns.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if the nominal threat of that storyline was, say, Punisher versus Deathstroke, where you've got people that do nothing but shoot guns, it seems like.
Yeah.
You could have had a very poignant story with those two, you know, Spider-Man being treated by Batman of, oh, you know, he thinks I'm just a joke, whatever. But Batman coming to realize, wait, this guy has a similar backstory. He understands the pain, etc. I think there was a lot that in the right hands could have been really good. And if they did that, then you could have had Superman and Deadpool team up. And I guess the way I would almost see that playing out, as unoriginal as it would be, is you've got Deadpool, kind of the crazed maniac, for whatever reason, trying to kill Superman and not having any luck with that whatsoever. And it really would have been shades of an Ambush Bug storyline at that point.
Yeah, that's actually a good idea. John the Editor needs to be a thing.
Well, they know where to get in touch with me.
You do have expertise.
So this was okay, but we'd already seen Superman and Spider-Man team up recently, and again, God, I guess that was almost 50 years ago now.
Yeah.
I wish they would chart a little new ground in some of these things.
Instead of rehashing what's already been done.
Yeah.
Unfortunate. It wasn't bad, but there's a lot of almost slight misses or things that they could have tweaked to make it better.
It wasn't bad, but it wasn't epic. And I felt that way with the previous Superman, Spider-Man, and both the Batman, Deadpool ones. And when you look back prior to that, I believe the last one was really the JLA Avengers, which I thought was just epic in scale, scope, and execution.
That's unfortunate.
So they had a high bar to reach, and they didn't, which is not surprising, but still disappointing.
Yeah. Well, very unfortunate.
All right. So what's your next pick?
Okay. My next picks, I kind of rank things, and some of them were like very similar, but I think I'm going to talk about Feral. Okay. Feral 21, which, remember, is Cat's Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. It's literally the Walking Dead. I mean, not
beat for beat, but it's the same idea. It's an apocalyptic thing. It's just cats.
Yeah, Tony Fleeks is an amazing writer. It doesn't matter if you do the superhero thing they did. It was a flip book. I can't remember the name of it right now. He did that. He's done several things that are just really amazing. We did Stray Dogs. We did a back issue spotlight on it.
Yeah, that was good.
And so Tony Fleeks and crew give us a silent issue in the world of Feral this time. And it's a silent issue because you're looking at the cats, and typically the cats, they're talking to each other. But essentially, if you see a word in here, it's from the humans. So the cats are just kind of doing their thing. And we're focused at the beginning almost completely on a Rottweiler pit bull mix. And his name is Moosh. And Moosh was like kind of this beloved dog character in this world of cats and everything that's going on with the zombie feral things that are happening. And Moosh, what he is able to do and his ability, we've seen him several times attack the infected, and he doesn't get infected himself. So I really think this was being set up. Now, this hasn't come out in the story, that he's kind of like the cure for this plague.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so that's what I think is going to happen eventually, even though it may not happen. You know, Moosh may be killed. I don't know. So he's missing, and one of the cats goes to find him because he's an ally to the cats, which is funny. And they want to find out where he went, and we get a behind-the-scene look of the humans taking on the outbreak and what they're doing with these dogs and cats. They're capturing uninfected dogs and cats and what they're trying and attempting to do to deal with this outbreak. And so we get entry to some characters that we saw before in a different title. And originally I put in here in my notes, hint, hint, Dr. Mo mentioned this on the Slack channel, but this is going back to probably April. And I read this in May, and we are recording this in July. It's well known now. It is the Stray Dogs cast. So the characters that we reviewed, Stray Dogs, show up at the end of this, and it's just very clever. It gets people excited. People who are fans of that title will be like, woohoo. I say that like with no excitement, but it's kind of cool that he's tying it into that adventure and the murder thing that happened with that cast of dogs. They're now in this world.
Mm-hmm. Turning it into a shared universe with it. Yeah,
exactly. So really cool. I thought it was clever, and I will tell you my opinion in the future about how the Stray Dogs interact in here and what happens, because I've already read some of that because we're recording in July.
Yeah, yeah. Again, there were delays, but yeah.
Yeah, but I really did enjoy it. I liked the surprise, and Dr. Mo had put like a teaser in there, and he's like, it was in the spoiler thing, I think he put it, and I read it, and I was like, oh, so the Stray Dogs are going to be there. So I knew it was going to happen, but I didn't think it would come about like this. And I only say that as a spoiler because there's been probably two or three issues since I read this that have come out with the Stray Dogs. So people who are not 3 months behind know this.
Well, the fact that Feral is still going at 21 issues says a lot right there, because let's face it, a lot of DC and Marvel titles don't last that long.
No, it's insane how many Marvel titles are 5-issue miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
And DC is a little bit better, but it's just things don't last. And it's because the industry is a little bit sick.
We've gotten to the point where there's a very clear delineation between the evergreens, the Spider-Mans, the Supermans, the Batmans, the Avengers, the Justice League, or whatever, and the let's try a series and see if we can get an arc, maybe two out of it.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's Jason Zeller. He's a big fan of Moon Knight.
Mm-hmm.
And McKay has been writing Moon Knights. And there's been like 5 relaunches of Moon Knight for him to tell the tale, because the sales aren't there to keep Moon Knight going. There's not enough Moon Knight fans.
To me, that's a clear sales shenanigan of retitling the thing with every story arc.
Yeah. And at that point, you're your own worst enemy, and you're killing it, and you're the problem, if that makes sense.
Well, it does, because imagine somebody saying it's really good, and let's say there's that hypothetical person that's going to the back issue bins to go find these things. And they've got to be walking all over the damn store because this is under Mark Spector. That's under Moon Knight. This is under Vengeance of. This is under whatever the hell other titles they used or what have you.
And at that point, you throw your hands up in the air and you buy the omnibus. You wait for the omnibus or something.
Or you just get it digitally or you just don't bother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's eventually what happens. I went digital, but I would say a lot of times I'm just not bothering. Even though it's there, I haven't made the effort to go look for these things. Pick it up and read it.
You find something you like, and then you're worried about which order do I read what titles in. Mm-hmm. And then when you've got six titles, four or five issues a piece, it seems like, over a 30-issue story, it quickly gets to where, for some people, it's more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah, like if I pick up that Vengeance of the Moon Knight, issue number one, and I realize this is like issue 27 in his run, I'm a little bit, what's going on here? I got to read that whole thing at the beginning, and I'm like, I'm already checking out a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
If that makes sense.
This is nothing new for Marvel.
Yeah.
At one point, they had two Iron Man titles going, and I swear, one of them started as Iron Man and the other is Invincible. Each of them changed their names enough, and it wound up with the one that had been Iron Man was now Invincible Iron Man. And I think, I could be wrong about this, the one that was Invincible Iron Man was now Iron Man. It's like they'd swapped the titles or some such.
If you're trying to inventory and organize that stuff in a story, you're like ready to kill somebody, wring their neck. Oh, God.
Cataloging comics is way harder than it needs to be because of this sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It just kind of sad.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so what's your second thing?
My second thing is I read issues 47 to 50 of Batman Superman World's Finest.
Oh, okay.
Now, I'd been kind of naively thinking that, okay, they've got this story that's going, it'll probably just land at issue 50, which isn't exactly what happened. They dealt with, in 47, the fusion of Superman and Batman fighting the merger of Lex and Joker.
Okay.
Which was kind of fun, and there's a loose thread there that clearly Mark Waid has plans for. With 48, we got to see how things are on Earth 3 these days. I mean, this is a retro series, but how they are in this continuity at that time. We got to see the Doom Syndicate, which is a take on the Doom Patrol. I thought that was kind of fun. Didn't really expect the ending of that one, but it leads into 49, which is the end of that two-parter. And it kind of reminded me of the Super Friends episode where Superman gets stuck on an evil world.
Okay.
And says, oh, I'll come back and save the day here or whatever. I'll bring my friends and stuff. And of course, it never does. I'm curious if Mark Waid is going to follow up on this later or not. I wouldn't be surprised if he does, but I don't think he's obligated to.
Okay. All right.
And then 50, which of course was celebrating hitting 50 issues, oversized thing. Lead story was good. It wasn't great. We get Jimmy and Robin versus Supergirl and Batgirl. And I'm sorry, if you're going to pit those two pairings together, I'm betting on the girls hand down.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a fun story. It wasn't essential reading, but it was enjoyable. So I liked it.
Cool.
But I did go into it thinking that it was all going to be kind of building an arc, since that seems to be what happens these days. And it didn't, and I was okay with that. Again, I did enjoy the Earth 3 stuff, but I like the Crime Syndicate, so, you know, that was an easy sell for me.
Nice.
Yeah, what's your third pick?
Okay, my third pick, and I was kind of looking at the things that I had here, and I think I'm going to talk about Skinbreaker number 7. I had Department of Truth I had read, Geiger, you know, some other things, but I'm going to go with Skinbreaker again. And Skinbreaker is a good series, and this was the issue the old tribal leader had been warning about the entire story. So if you remember, I talked about the first issue when it came out. There was a old tribal leader getting overthrown by a younger, the old ways versus the new ways. And mm-hmm. These are the kids that have grown up, and now they're in charge, and it's the same type of struggle. And lo and behold, these creatures that this tribe hunts and essentially eats at times have become smarter and they learn. And the hunters have become the hunted at this point. And so the might makes right and the strength and fight the old ways group has kind of chased the old chieftain out of there, who had been like, hey, let's build traps. Let's be smarter. Let's do things where we're not risking our lives and using brute force. And so the tribe is essentially, because these creatures are smarter, getting attacked and not faring well. Until an expected or unexpected hero shows up depending on it, you know who's going to show up. I mean, it's a story, and you know who's been missing, but somebody shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little bit hokey, but it was nice, and it leads up to a big finale for next month. It's only going to go for 8 issues. So it's an 8-issue series. If you want to go and read it digitally later on, pretty soon, actually, now it's July, you can probably read the whole thing digitally and be done with it. And I will tell you, David Finch is an artist, and we've seen him at DC, we've seen him at Image, we've seen him different places. He is just, it's breathtaking art to behold the amount of detail and time and effort he puts into his art, the line work. He doesn't skimp on anything. And this is one of those books. I did not buy it as a magazine. You know, I'm reading this stuff digitally.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand why they came out with a magazine size comic for this, because the art is that intricate that when it's blown up, you're just, wow, this is amazing. Really cool.
Cool.
Are you a fan of David Finch? I don't know if you know him that well.
Not one that I would pick up a book just because he's on it.
Okay. All right. Cool, cool. Understandable. I became a big, big fan based on this. Just FY. I mean, I liked them before, but this one made me a super fan.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. What is your third thing?
My third thing is the Department of Super Abled Universe, also known as the Super Villain Rehabilitation Project Universe.
Oh, my goodness.
What I'm going to talk about is actually not either of those exactly, but the Superhero Romance Project series of novels. All of these are by H.L. Burke. She's been writing these things, I want to say, since 2020, but has got a lot of books out there.
Wow.
The Superhero Romance Project is something my sister had picked up at one point and shared it with me on Kindle. And I'm like, hey, I just need something. Sure. Well, I'll try a superhero for Christmas. I mean, the thing reads like a Hallmark movie title, doesn't it? And it actually reads like a Hallmark movie in all of the right ways.
Huh.
They started with that. They had another book of A Superhero Ever After, which was kind of a sequel to it. But then from there after, we start bouncing to different characters, some of which we see later and stuff. So I have, including what I've read in June, finished off all 10 of those novels. But I don't want to talk about all of them. I mean, this is a universe in which, obviously, there's a lot of love in the air for these books, because, I mean, go figure, they're romance books. But the superhero side of things, it's clear to me that the author is not somebody who's got stacks of long boxes and has plowed through every Marvel and DC book ever read.
Okay.
But understands the ins and outs of the supervillain, superhero stuff well enough that there was nothing in there that I'm like, well, geez, you didn't get that power name right, or you goofed on this, or a few things like that. There was a different series that they used the word empath, I thought, totally wrong, and it just kept annoying. None of that kind of stuff here.
Okay.
In this universe, there is a governmental department, the Department of Super Abled, Sables for short is what they call their people with powers, that took the people with powers from being just random heroes and villains and stuff, but there's now an organization of them. Cities have official teams, etc. They're sanctioned.
Okay.
And in some of these, and again, it goes back to the origins of this narrative universe with the Supervillain Rehabilitation Project, two or three of these, the romance is between a hero and a villain. And unsurprisingly, the villain winds up getting rehabilitated and such. And sometimes we see them later. There's enough connections between the books that it's clearly a shared universe, but nothing where it's like, oh, I didn't read this other book, I'm lost.
Okay, cool.
The page counts read from as short as 135 pages to as long as, I think, 313.
Wow.
So there's a bit of variance there. The final one of the bunch I really enjoyed. And then since then, I'll probably talk about this when we do the June Monthly Comic Spotlight, I've started reading the Supervillain Rehabilitation Project, which is what launched this whole universe.
Wow, cool.
There was a short story that I think was written later, but the start of the first novel, there's actually a pitch for the concept of why it's a good idea to rehabilitate the villains versus just incarcerate them.
Okay.
And it's like, that was well thought out.
Cool, cool.
Some of these heroes have the standard, they can fly, shoot energy bolts. Some of them have much more esoteric powers, and not every Sable or super-abled person is cut out to be a superhero or supervillain. They may have more minor or fairly esoteric powers.
That makes sense. Yeah, something that's almost, I don't want to say pointless, but it's just, it doesn't change a lot.
Yeah. Well, that's part of what I enjoyed about the final one, Dating a Supervillain's Daughter, is there were three main characters that had abilities.
Okay.
None of which were cookie cutter comic book style or movie style abilities.
Cool. It sounds kind of interesting.
It is. It's a ton of fun. There's also, I want to say, two or three other kind of sub franchises or branches of this franchise and stuff. And the stories are progressing in time, sometimes a little more than I would have expected, because it's not unusual for one of these things to end with, you know, hey, the couple has gotten together, and then it's a roll forward 9 months, and oh, they've got a kid, or, you know, some such like that.
Yeah.
An epilogue of they have a happy ever after, at least for a little while.
Okay, cool.
So again, these are by H.L. Burke, B-U-R-K-E.
H.L. Burke. Never heard of that person.
I hadn't heard of her before these. She's written other stuff, though. Seems fairly prolific.
Oh, yeah.
All of this is under Kindle Unlimited.
Oh, all right. All right. Yeah, I'm looking at the books right now, and the covers there, they're kind of cool. I like them.
Some of the covers for these are almost what I would consider indie-level superhero art, not Marvel DC type.
Exactly. It like almost looks stylized a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
If you liked Love and Capes by Tom Zoller.
I did.
This is a similar sensibility.
All right. I clicked on, I did a search for her and H.L. Burke, and I clicked on Amazon and I could see all her books there. And it comes with Kindle Unlimited. There it is. I see like Game On, Game Changer, all kinds of stuff. Power On.
Yeah, those are some of the other branches of the franchise I just hadn't gotten to yet.
Yeah.
I've this month read Relapse, and I'm currently on Reformed, which again is the supervillain rehabilitation project kind of kicking that off.
Yeah, I see that. Relapse, Reformed, and they also have the superhero romance project, like a whole bunch of things.
Yeah, yeah. And the superhero romance stuff is what I've been reading of late.
Yeah. She's pretty prolific because I'm scrolling through here. She has a lot of books.
I have not looked at the timeline of publication on these things to know how fast she's cranking these out.
Yeah, she writes other stuff, too. It's not all that stuff.
Yeah.
She is a prolific writer. I'm like, holy mackerel. She has a lot of books.
And some of it's more fantasy-type stuff, etc. But these read well.
Okay, cool.
They seem to have a beginning, middle, and end. Right, there's a few things about the first two where it's like she had an idea, but it wasn't a series yet. Once she got to Second Chance Superhero, I think it was, the third one, then there's a character that's set up that gets used for the next one. Another one gets set up, used for the next. I mean, there's some bridge characters and stuff.
Oh, okay. All right.
So I appreciate that aspect. It builds out the shared universe.
All right. Very cool. Very cool. All right. So if you're fans of superheroes or looking for something to read, definitely for the price of Kindle Unlimited, that's insane not to pick those up.
Yeah. But again, this is almost a Hallmark take on it for this stuff. If you're looking for superhero slugfest or whatever, this isn't that.
Okay. All right, cool.
It's much more character motivated. And certainly for the superhero romance project, there's love in the air.
Hey, there you go.
It's fun stuff, though. I've enjoyed them.
All right, cool. All right, my last pick?
Yeah.
Okay, I will tell you, I did read Department of Truth, and it was kind of cool because it's on the 24-hour news cycle and how CNN kicked that off and how it's affected things in this world. But instead of talking about that, I was going to talk about something which is a little more boring for you, and I apologize. I'm hitting you with Conan twice. But an issue of Savage Sword of Conan came out along with Conan number 30. And I will say it was not one of the best Conan tales I've read, but it was a solid tale. But there's two things that really, for people who've read Savage Sword of Conan in the past, and grew up reading these tales. You hear us talk about it like in book club or on the Slack channel. First, the creative team was Roy Thomas and Robert De La Torre on the art. That's a killer team up. Roy Thomas is infamous for writing Conan tales at Marvel. And Robert De La Torre did a lot of the art here at Titan, and he's done a fantastic job on the Conan stuff. And the second reason why you want to look at this is Savage Sword of Conan. And what I mean by that, in this issue, there's no other way to say it, there's full-on nudity in this black and white magazine. So it's not obscene, but it's titillating, and the art reminds me of the Savage Sword of Conan when I was a kid. And you're like, oh my God, why was a kid reading this? You'll hear like brawling and all of us. We kind of would go to pick this up because it was the black and white magazines. They did not fall under the Comics Code Authority back in the day. And so that was the way around it to where they could put out the spicier things. And so if you were a kid and you went to the comic shop back in the day with me, and when I say kid, let's say it was 13, 14, I really don't remember. if you could find some Savage Heart of Conan to flip through it, you're just like, whoa, this is like, wow, this is the adult stuff. It wasn't over the top, but, you know, it's that level. It wasn't as accessible to us as kids today growing up with a computer. And so this tale is fast moving. 85% of the book was the main Conan story that Roy Thomas was writing. It felt like he gave us 2 issues worth of material. You see Conan as a thief. He's meeting someone. You have him womanizing. You have battles with animals. You have battles with beasts. And you're like, beasts are animals. No, like monsters and things like that.
Right, right.
You have fights with large groups in a bar. This is like classic Roy Thomas Conan themes. All this stuff, the womanizing, the fighting in the bar, the fighting animals, you know, they'd always have the cover showing them fighting a gorilla or snake, something crazy. That's what's going on in this. And then they had a backup Solomon Kane tale, which, in my opinion, destroyed the issue from being really good because it was stylized art. And it's almost jarring when you go from Robert De La Torre doing that and you go to a Solomon Kane tale where it looks like cartoonish. And I was just like, man, it pulls you out of the story at that point.
Mm-hmm. It can leave the issue on a bad note for you. I can definitely see that.
Exactly. So I was happy that it was only like, let's say, 8 to 10 pages of it, but it was a downer. You get to the end and you're like, I got to slog through this. Yeah.
Well, and even if you don't read those 8 to 10 pages and stuff, you feel like you've paid for them.
Yeah.
And just instead of ending on a high note from the end of the lead story, you're like, wait, what the hell is this?
Exactly. Because we've had some Solomon Kane inside of Savage Sword of Conan. And I'm pretty sure it was Jason Zeller was talking about. He's a big fan of Solomon Kane.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's when we had Randy Zimmerman in the book club, the guy who's writing The Atlantean. And we were talking about Solomon Kane. He was a big fan. But they've had good tales around this character. They've had good art. And this one was just such a downer that I was feeling the pain that I felt like Jason was feeling. When he got to the story, we're like, oh, this stinks. And he may have loved it. I'm just teasing when I say that. But it just, for me, it was just so jarring. I don't like that transition where I feel like I'm in a completely different title. What is this?
Even if it's good, if it's stylistically and tonally very different, particularly on the art.
Yeah.
It's a major bump in the road and it throws you out of the kind of the zone you're in as you're reading.
Exactly. Like imagine you're reading something with your favorite Superman artist. You pick him, Swan. And you're reading this great tale, and then you get to the chibi art at the end. You're like, oh, come on, man.
Imagine if you're reading a Batman book, and you're really enjoying it, and then you hit the backup feature, and it's Batman the Animated Version.
Yeah.
And it may be a great story, but it's so different visually from what you just read, even if it's the same basic characters.
Yep.
It's the cognitive dissonance at that point kind of jars you.
Yeah, so that's the downside in this that kind of held it back for me, but I'm happy when I see Roy Thomas. That guy's in his late 70s and still writing, which is just, I don't want to say it's crazy. It's good, but you don't see many people who are like, I don't know how old he is, 78, 79, writing current comics. It's just cool to see.
Yeah. He's been a powerhouse in comics for decades.
Yeah. And so whenever I see him, I'm like, Roy Thomas, I got to read this.
I was a big fan of his stuff with Earth 2, All-Star Squadron, Infinity Inc., some of that stuff.
Yep.
He also did some lesser known work that some of the independent publishers back in the day. He's, yeah, super talented in a variety of different genres.
Yeah. Just prolific, that guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was my last one. What's your last thing, John?
My last topic, and I'm going to admit it's a little bit of a cheat. It's what I did over Memorial Day weekend.
Oh, yeah. Please share.
In case people didn't catch the announcement episode, my weekend went from my sister and I thinking, hey, let's go watch some TV, to spending the afternoon, evening, and a subsequent morning over at the hospital as our mother had emergency open heart surgery.
Yeah.
She was in the ICU for a bit. She was in the hospital for a bit. She was in skilled nursing. She had a return trip to the emergency room, stayed again in the hospital for a while. We've gotten her into a longer term facility. Generally, she's doing much better now, but the barometer for that, we're in the ER that Monday of Memorial Day weekend. The doctor says a specialist is coming in as we're running into the CT scan because we think it's aortic dissection type A. Gives a quick overview of what it is.
Yeah.
One type can be treated with surgery. The other can be treated with medicine, but the specialist will be in. Specialist, a little bit later, walks in, and I swear within 30 seconds of walking in, He's telling my mother, if you do not have this, there's an 80% mortality rate in the first 24 hours, and it gets worse from there.
Wow.
He had basically come in, said, hi, I am so-and-so, and then launched into that. Now, he probably presumed we'd been prepped for some of this. We hadn't. So, doing better than immediate death. But this has been just a crazy, crazy couple of weeks with a lot of uncertainty during parts of it. I mean, the will she live or not, that actually was answered pretty quickly. Really, the next day, if you didn't know she'd had open heart surgery, I don't think you'd have realized it.
Which is just crazy to me.
It's insane.
Yeah, my dad had open bypass stuff and it was rough, but that's amazing with your mom.
Yeah. Her energy has started to go way, way down for a couple of reasons. It's not that she is in immediate jeopardy of death. We're not out of the woods either kind of a deal. She's at that age where no doctor is ever going to give somebody, hey, you've got another 20 years to live, no problem kind of a thing. Because statistically speaking, you just don't when you get old.
Yeah.
But that's part of why, I mean, we haven't recorded in over a month. I don't honestly know what the podcast schedule is going to look like going forward in the short term. I've got another movie episode that'll go up the Monday after we record this, just because I need a little time to edit this. I may have another one that I slide in first. I don't know. It just depends when I think I can get kind of my life and my sister's life back on a regular rhythm.
Yeah.
Because this whole bit with what's going on with mom and stuff has just been kind of all-consuming for the last 5-6 weeks.
I can imagine. That's got to be just so challenging and stressful because you're dealing with emotions and it's your mom. It's crazy. Yeah. Going from, I don't know if she's going to live to she did, but everything else that's going on, it's just been a lot for you and your sister.
It's been a ton. And I'll be honest, my view of the American healthcare system, at least our experience with it, has been excellent in some respects, horrible in other respects. I mean, the people in the ER at the hospital we went to have been amazing, literally life-saving in my mom's case. And they were great people. The people who were the patient care technicians, the nurses, the kind of the boots on the ground in the hospital rooms just taking care of mom, absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
A few of the other people in more bureaucratic administrative sort of roles, not so much.
Yeah.
A few things, the way hospitals seem to work, where like on the second ER visit, it took over a week before we saw a nurse a second night in a row.
Wow.
They were there for a shift, never to be seen again.
Wow.
And it's like, how do you build up any kind of consistent care? And
yeah, it's really sad, but I understand what you mean. And we talked off the record that I'd looked at other countries, you know, as I'm aging and looking overseas, and to realize how much we pay, and yet our healthcare is not the best. People think it is, they say it is, but it's not. I told you, you can go to Malaysia or Thailand and get better healthcare at a fraction of the cost. And it's eye-opening because, like, here we are at our 250th birthday because we're recording on July 2nd.
Yeah, yeah.
And 2 days is the 250th birthday. And it's just, I feel like we're in this weird, almost dystopia. I love this country, but there's so many things that are just off with priorities and the way things are done. And there's certain things that are just a little bit sad. It's like we can do better.
There were two times at least at the hospital where every time we're talking to people and they want contact information, my sister and I give them my information, her information, and my sister's the primary because she knows more of the medical details and stuff like that. Twice I had to give the caseworker my sister's name and phone number. I mean, there are certain things that are not just, do they have the equipment? Do they have the medical knowledge? Whatever. They're just basic table stakes of if you're pushing papers, you should have been able to do this kind of a deal.
Wow.
And I get the caseworkers are probably overloaded again. I think we went through 6 or 7 over all the time she was there. And when I saw some of the handovers between the nurses, it's like they'd come into the room. They'd have a quick huddle for like 2 minutes. Here's what you need to know on this patient. The person taking over is writing it down, and that's the handoff.
Boom. Done.
And it's like, I can imagine the game of telephone tag of how that deteriorates over a week and stuff.
Yeah, like you said, if you're in there long term, the communication's broken down because so many people have touched it. The mistakes can be made. And that's sad.
We got her in there in the evening, so we'll say 5 o'clock. 11 o'clock, she's in surgery. We duck out to get food because my sister hadn't eaten at all that day. We come back. We're in the waiting room out of the ICU. 3 o'clock rolls around, I think it was, maybe 2 o'clock. Anyways, early in the morning. I get a call. surgery went well. I'm like, we're in the waiting room if you want to talk to us. Nope, it's good. You can go home.
What?
That was the handoff to the family on this.
Wow. That's just crazy.
So the frustration and wait, what sort of thing going on over the last 5 weeks has just been absolutely insane. And I'm hoping it's done.
Yeah. And that's why you and I haven't met up for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the first time we're talking. I canceled on you, what, 3 times in a row right before? And it's like, yeah, we'll just pause.
And I was just like, yeah, forget it. Do your thing.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. And I'm a big family comes first. This is a podcast, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a free podcast. Neither one of us are paid to do it. You actually pay out of your pocket to do it.
Yep. Yep.
So if you got to pause for your family, anyone who faults you for that, they're not a good person.
Nobody has faulted me for that, and I appreciate it. I did have one person basically say that they'd missed us talking about the comics. So what they've done is, and I don't know if they've continued, they started with the first weekly comic spotlight from nearly 20 years ago.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Curious if they're keeping up with that or not.
That's funny. Yeah, that's really cool.
One other thing I've done, there have been some DDoS attacks. That's a distributed denial of service attack, which means there is like a bot farm or something pounding on the website from a variety of angles. So it's not like I can just say, well, ignore that one IP address. The site was getting hammered. It had been taken down 2 or 3 times. I did some analysis. Like at one point, 95% of the traffic was pounding on the forum.
Okay.
And I'm like, I do not have time to deal with this. So I have shut down the forum for maintenance. And I don't know when it's going to come out of there. I need time to deal with that. And it's not been a high priority.
Oh, okay. All right. So the forums are down as of July 2nd when we're recording this. And hopefully they're up one day.
Before then.
Before that. All right.
But I've also noticed the traffic on the website after doing that and a few other preventative measures and stuff, orders of magnitude less. The legitimate traffic is all still there. All of the stuff just trying to, abuse the system and stuff like that has pretty much been dealt with.
Okay.
And if I can get one other thing kind of set up, I should be able to get the forum back up. But again, it's not been a high priority.
All right. Well, good luck with that.
We still got Slack and stuff. So yeah.
Exactly. I think more people use Slack more than they do the forums just because it pops up. And me, just so you know, I was kind of absentee because I had a business trip and then just some stuff going on in the business world. Mm-hmm. And so I was completely checked off out of the Slack and everything. And I would check in with you every now and then. Hey, you doing okay? But I had my plate full too. It was a weird time for both of us. Different things. Yeah. Me more on the business side and you more on the personal side, that I felt like it was like karma and the universe telling us, take a break. Don't do this now. You got more important stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've had some other stuff going on. Not all of it bad, but all of it requiring attention.
Yeah. Yeah. Life is not horrible. I'm happy and things are fine. But you and I both went through a stressful time where we were both like going from you thinking you might be losing another parent.
Yeah.
And me, I was like on the career front, I was like, what's going to happen in the future? It's just very, very, very unnerving and you get really stressed out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm glad things are better for both of us and we're in a better place right now. And if recordings are regular, it's because stuff popped up and that's it.
Yeah. I'm hoping we can get recordings back on a regular schedule. I just need to talk with my sister, confirm a few things and stuff like that. So I think we're getting close to it. I just don't know that we're there yet.
Yeah.
We've got, one or two more decisions and things to deal with. And again, not all of them are bad things. It's just we haven't gotten back into that steady status quo just yet. We're close.
Yeah. Yep. And no more trips for me. So you let me know when you're ready and I'll be there for you.
Sounds good. Anything else for the episode?
Nah, that does it for me.
Cool. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, forum, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayo. And thanks again for listening.